regime was defeated by Palestinian resistance group Hamas. Hamas agrees to a 4-day temporary humanitarian truce in Gaza, which includes the exchange of prisoners and the entry of aid trucks. Plus, more than 100 Palestinians killed in the latest Israeli strikes on Gaza are laid to rest in a mass grave in Khan Yunis. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the Israeli regime has been knocked out in the Palestinian Al-Aqsa flood operation. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks while meeting with Iranian athletes and medal winners participated in the 2023 Asian Games in China. The leader expressed his appreciation of those athletes who took a stand in support of Palestine in some way, including rejecting the occupying regime's representatives in the tournament. He also thanked those who dedicated their medals to the children of Gaza and the martyrs of a hospital bombed by the regime. The leader said the truthfulness of such acts is manifested more than ever in the wake of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Ayatollah Khamenei has repeatedly condemned the ongoing Israeli massacre of Gazans, calling on all Muslim countries to cut ties with the occupying regime. Human rights activist Gina Rabai says Israel has failed to achieve any of its objectives, and the aggression in Gaza has only exposed Israel's weakness and brutality.
What decides, the standard that decides whether a side in a war or a military combat has won or has been defeated is the objectives, whether its objectives have been achieved or not. Now Israel has put its objectives since the beginning of its aggression on Gaza. Firstly, but it has been declining its objectives, though, and that is also a weak stance for it. First, it said it was going to demolish Hamas completely, and it was trying to reoccupy Gaza. Then it declined to an objective to enter Gaza a few meters and to keep the land that it enters to keep it to itself, but that did not happen. So the fact that Israel didn't achieve anything, in spite of all the massacres that it has committed until now, is a clear defeat for it. Israel would never have suggested even truce or taken it into consideration or even taken into consideration negotiating with Hamas for the prisoners if it was achieving any military achievement. Human rights activists and even political researchers have been saying this. It doesn't have a chance of winning. If it took the option of going into negotiations from the beginning, it would have spared itself this disgrace. Now it has proven to the whole world how brutal and how monstrous it is, yet how weak on a military and an intelligent level it is.
Hamas says it has agreed to humanitarian truce in Gaza. The 4-day truce, mediated by Qatar and Egypt, includes the exchange of Israeli captives with Palestinian prisoners. Hamas says 50 Israeli captives, all women and children, will be released in exchange for 150 Palestinian women and children. Under the agreement, hundreds of trucks of humanitarian aid, including fuel and medicine, will be taken to all areas in Gaza. During the truce, the Israeli regime is supposed to stop arresting or attacking anyone all across the besieged territory. Qatar and Israel have confirmed the agreement as well. The truce will take effect on Thursday morning and could be extended. Israel has carried out new airstrikes on Gaza despite a truce announcement. 5 Palestinians have been killed in the attacks in the Jabalia refugee camp in the northern strip. The latest footage shows plumes of smoke rising in the sky over northern Gaza, hours after the warring sides agreed to the truce mediated by Qatar and Egypt. It is the 47th day since the Israeli regime launched its war on Gaza. Residential buildings have been the main target of Israeli warplanes and artillery. Hospitals are not spared from Israeli bombardments either, with Hashifa Hospital in Gaza City being the hardest hit over the past couple weeks.
They are bombing all around the hospital, and they are digging in many areas within the hospital. Question part. It's again that you feel in a war area, with a lot of tanks, a lot of troops all over the time. What's happening now is that they are totally very, very aggressive with the medical staff here, and they keep pushing us hardly and arresting us, each one of us, for a few hours.
The health ministry in Gaza says that Israel has been targeting hospitals in order to displace those who have taken shelter over there. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization has reported the killing of one of its employees alongside her family members in Gaza. The French medical charity Doctors Without Borders also says three medics, including two of its own, were killed in a strike on Al Auda Hospital in northern Gaza. The group says it was horrified by the incidents. More than 14,000 people, mostly women and children, have been killed in Gaza since the war began. Palestinians bid farewell to the victims of recent Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip. The bodies of over 100 martyrs, including women and children, were laid to rest in a mass grave in the southern city of Khan Yunis. They were all killed in nonstop Israeli attacks on Al-Shifa and Beit Hanun hospitals in the past few days. In the meantime, displaced Palestinians in Khan Yunis have slammed the recent temporary ceasefire between Hamas and the Israeli regime. They've argued that the truce cannot compensate for the destruction of their homes.
We hope to go back home, to the way it was before. However, even if we do return, our homes are no longer standing. We have been displaced and have nowhere to go. Even if we were to return, our homes have been destroyed.
They are talking about a truce, but what truce? Is it about the wounded, the martyrs, or the homes that have been destroyed? What kind of truce are they discussing? A truce just to allow in some aid? We do not want that. We will manage with bread. What we truly want is not a truce for aid. We want our homes back. We want to return to our streets to access our destroyed homes. This is our desire.
In a recent report, the United Nations has said over 1.7 million people, almost 80% of the population of the coastal territory, are displaced from their homes. More than half of the homes have also been destroyed following the Israeli attacks since October the 7th. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, has described the situation in Gaza shelters as unlivable. Israel's brutal aggression on Gaza has further exposed the ugly face of the occupying regime, sparking global outcry. Press TV has conducted interviews with a number of people in India. Let's see how they have commented on the U.S.-backed genocide.
Gaza crisis is very complicated, but ultimately Gaza is sitting on huge amount of oil. And also the fact that U.S. economy and Israel economy is highly dependent on the armaments. The more they sell and more wars, it helps their economy to function, because they are totally dependent on selling arms to other countries. That is why it is in their interest that wars keep happening. So that is what they are doing in Gaza also. And they want to now totally capture the whole place, even that small space where Palestinians are living, which is called an open jail. Now they want to capture every part of that land. And it is not easy, especially in the circumstances that the countries across are not standing with Palestine. As far as India is concerned, India always stood with the people of Palestine.
Gaza is alone and nations are watching the genocide and just issuing statements. Today it's Gaza, but tomorrow it will be another Muslim nation. Israelis are slaughtering innocent men, women and children. They haven't even spared hospitals. This is very unfortunate.
Mariam Saleh, a correspondent, joins us now from Beirut. And we also have Eric Wahlberg, Canadian author and journalist, joining us from Toronto. First, over to you, Mariam. What do you have for us?
Resistance operations as well as Israeli shelling. And this is something that is longstanding. It's this historic method of dealing with things for the Israelis. Always in 2006, for example, in the last few hours of just before the ceasefire, we had most heinous massacres being committed in several of the residential areas. Hundreds of people were killed during the last few hours just before the ceasefire. And now we're looking at the same. Also in 1996, we saw a massacre of over 100 people in Makana town just hours before there was a declaration of a ceasefire, also after the aggression of the Israeli aggression on Lebanon. Now also we see how the Israelis have increased their shelling of Gaza and South Lebanon. We have them even reaching areas that go way beyond the 10 kilometers, if we may say, region, which it was usually the place where the boundaries were of the Israeli shelling and the Hezbollah operations. Hezbollah has also launched several salvos of rockets, and that was also significant to see that Hezbollah is also retaliating directly. Once the Israelis do target areas that are civilian areas, they are targeting using their rockets and even continuing more operations against the Israeli post, in addition to the targeting of soldiers, tanks, in addition to armored vehicles. That comes also as we hear from Hezbollah officials, members of parliament, that are saying that it is now clear that with the truce that could come in place, we can see definitely that the Israelis have not achieved anything. And this is why they will try to commit more massacres, since for them, that is in itself an achievement. They're going to be continuing with their shelling in attempts to kill more people, as many as they can, as many innocent people as they can, whether in Gaza or South Lebanon. As we saw just yesterday, they targeted two journalists along with a civilian. And before that, also an elderly civilian was also martyred. So we might see in the last few hours, just before the ceasefire, if of course this will also lead to some sort of a ceasefire or a truce in South Lebanon as well, we might see intensified shelling throughout the night today also in South Lebanon.
All right, Eric Wahlberg, taking a look at the pause that has happened. Of course, some are using other terminology for this, but we call it a humanitarian pause. The deduction that's being made here in terms of the one of the outcomes of this is that Israel has not achieved its goals, and therefore it is a sign of defeat for Israel, not only with the stated aim that it had said was to eradicate Hamas, but also by their own admission prior to this pause, was that if we do opt for a ceasefire, then that would mean that we are giving in to Hamas and that we have lost to them. So is that what has happened here, that they have indeed, when you take a look at the facts, to have, in some sense, been defeated?
It certainly looks that way. It started out as a mad, crazy killing after the original October 7th invasion of Israel. And so this was the revenge phase, and this revenge phase seems to be winding down, thankfully, and due largely to international pressure that is coming stronger and stronger all the time. So I think Israel is finally waking up to the fact that it cannot just proceed to kill and massacre as it wishes, that it has to take into account the international community and the Palestinians. It's wonderful to see that the goals of Hamas are being achieved, the liberation of already hundreds, 150, and hopefully all Palestinian prisoners. So this indeed will be a triumph if Hamas is able to hold firm and not cave in to this intense Israeli pressure at this point.
All right, Eric Wahlberg, in terms of the protests that happened on a worldwide scale and numbers that showed up, that was something that obviously Israel took a beating in terms of its image, whatever form and shape it was in. It was destroyed in some sense. Tell us whether you agree with us on that or not, and how, along with that, given the fact that the U.S. provided Israel with arms and was against the ceasefire for such a long time, where now it says it entertains and it receives this ceasefire positively, that they were also affected and impacted negatively by the fact that you have a ceasefire now into effect.
Well, the demonstrations have been unprecedented, really. These are historic moments around the world, and within the United States itself, very strong protests, and by many Jewish leaders as well. So I think that Israel really is taking a beating here. Its international position has really been tarnished irrevocably. It's impossible for it to keep up its pretense of any kind of democracy. The world now sees Israel as an apartheid state. It's linked now in the global mind with apartheid South Africa. And there is only one way out of apartheid. And Israel has now got to face this dilemma. It's tried to avoid it since 1948, spinning lies and stealing more territory. But excuse me, in its latest rush to take over all of the West Bank, it has bitten more than it can chew. And it is now being forced to disgorge its ill-gotten gains. I think this is the narrative that we see now being cemented in the minds of people around the world. Israel's allies are very few and very disreputable people. Someone like Zelensky is a great fan of Israel, or this Melo, the new Argentinian right-wing leader. So these leaders are not representing the best of humanity by any means. So Israel is really being lumped in excuse me, in with them.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Eric, you can catch your breath there. We're at the end of this. Eric Wahlberg there, a Canadian author and journalist from Toronto. And Mariam Saleh, thank you, a correspondent there from Beirut. And that is it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Zionist regime's military has delivered on the promises made by the regime's leaders to render Gaza uninhabitable for its 2.3 million Palestinian residents, most of them refugees. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "Civilians are facing the immediate possibility of starvation," the head of the World Food Programme said recently, with the organization adding that Gaza's entire population is in desperate need of food assistance. The meager amounts of food being allowed into Gaza under the Zionist regime's comprehensive siege, a collective punishment amounting to a death sentence imposed for more than 6 weeks, only meets 7% of the people's daily minimum caloric needs, the UN's largest humanitarian agency said. Most of the bakeries in Gaza that weren't targeted and destroyed in the Zionist regime's bombing have shut down after running out of fuel, which the Zionist regime has refused to allow into the territory. No bakeries are currently operating in the northern half of Gaza. The World Food Programme said that whatever food remains in the few shops that are still open are being sold at inflated prices and are of little use without the ability to cook. The Zionist regime said that it had agreed to let in 2 truckloads of fuel a day at the request of Washington to help the United Nations meet basic needs, and it spoke of plans to increase aid more broadly, Reuters reported recently. While COGAT, the Zionist regime's military body that oversees the administration of Gaza, claims there is no limitation on the delivery of humanitarian aid, it will still have full control over everything that goes into Gaza. COGAT says that it will require the UN to provide lists of aid and that the military body will check all deliveries. This means the Zionist regime will maintain a chokehold and exercise veto power over the provision of desperately needed life essentials to people that Ghassan Alion, the head of the COGAT, described on October 10th as human beast. Alion added in a clear declaration of intent to commit a crime against humanity, "You will not have electricity or water. You will just get hell." Philip Lazzarini, the head of UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, said recently that there is a deliberate attempt to strangle our operation. He added that the tiny shipment of fuel that UNRWA, the largest humanitarian organization operating in Gaza, received recently was delivered with the condition that it is to be used only and exclusively for trucks transferring aid delivered to Gaza via Rafah crossing with Egypt. This condition means that the fuel cannot be used for essential operations, including water treatment and sewage pumping or baking bread. He said that it is outrageous that humanitarian agencies are reduced to begging for fuel and forced after that to decide who will we assist or not assist when you have such a large population in a life-saving situation. Indeed, the highly limited and Israeli-controlled humanitarian aid via Rafah crossing is an American fig leaf for the genocidal campaign underway in Gaza. Meanwhile, Palestinians in Gaza say they have been abandoned and betrayed by international agencies, particularly UNRWA and the ICRC, left without even their humanitarian presence as the Zionist regime raids and destroys hospitals and UNRWA schools and refugee camps in the northern half of Gaza. 3 prominent Palestinian human rights groups say the full force of one of the world's most powerful militaries is being unleashed against a captive civilian population under the voyeuristic gaze of the international community. Dozens of independent UN human rights experts warned recently that the Zionist regime's grave violations against Palestinians point to a genocide in the making. They say this is demonstrated by the Zionist regime's genocidal incitement, overt intent to destroy the Palestinian people under occupation, loud calls for a second Nakba in Gaza and the rest of the occupied Palestinian territory, and the use of powerful weaponry with inherently indiscriminate impacts, resulting in a colossal death toll and destruction of life-sustaining infrastructure. The destruction of life-sustaining infrastructure includes the hospitals in Gaza City and northern Gaza, despite or because of the presence of patients, their family members, health workers, and displaced people sheltering at the facilities. Thank you. Recently, the Zionist regime forces ordered patients and medics to evacuate Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest health facility, within 1 hour, some at gunpoint, Al Jazeera reported. The Israeli regime army denied giving any evacuation order, but Mohammad Zaqout, the director general of hospitals in Gaza, told Al Jazeera, "I categorically deny these false allegations from the Israeli army. I am telling you we were forced to leave by gunpoint." Omar Zaqout, the hospital's supervisor, told Al Jazeera that forced evacuations began after the army's deadline passed, adding that the scenes outside were appalling. Zaqout said, "We were told to leave through Al Wida Road. Dozens of dead bodies are scattered on the road. Many homeless people who cannot walk are left out in the open." Munir Al-Borsh, a doctor at Al-Shifa, told the network that the Israeli regime army warned that all those leaving had to wave a white handkerchief and walk in a single line. "They were humiliated by soldiers all along the road. Many of the patients were put on wheelchairs or rolling beds. Family members were forced to carry their wounded children or parents themselves. These are horrible, unprecedented scenes." Al Jazeera Arabic reported that many medical staff defied orders to leave the hospital and vowed to remain there with their parents, who could not be moved, including dozens of premature babies. After besieging it for days and launching heavy attacks on its surroundings, the Zionist regime raided Al-Shifa Hospital recently. Israel has so far failed to yield evidence that the hospital was used as a command center by Hamas, as the Zionist regime has claimed for years, eliciting skepticism even among its most loyal stenographers at the BBC. Dozens of patients, including premature babies, have died at Al-Shifa since November 11th due to the lack of electricity. Recently, the Zionist regime raided a children's hospital also in Gaza City. In a propaganda video recorded in the basement of the facility, the Israeli regime's military chief spokesperson claims a calendar lists the names of terrorists who guarded over hostages. In reality, it named the days of the week. That video, like the one recorded at Al-Shifa, was roundly mocked on social media. The Zionist regime has not provided any resembling compelling proof that hospitals in Gaza's north were used as terror infrastructure, but it rendered the hospitals inoperable in the process.
Ocean of Dua. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran. And we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing the different objectives of supplications. We said that for a concept like supplication, there can be many approaches to discuss the parts around. In order to elaborate more, we moved on and said that objectives of supplication are numerous. But for us, to be engaging in supplication, there seems to be some prerequisites, some conditions provided by the Ahlul Bayt, by the infallible Imams, by those very Imams who have handed down these transmitted supplications to us. And these are provided for us to be taught and learned by reading and reciting these supplications. So we are discussing the different objectives, specifically the objectives of these transmitted supplications. Now, we said that one of the important objectives of supplication can be found in this thing that, in this matter, that the infallible Imams who are engaging in supplications, they consider themselves nothing. They consider themselves as the simplest of all creatures. And then it is the time for them to be engaging in supplication. It is as though they think that this is the condition, this is the prerequisite of the supplicant in order to engage in supplication. So prior to talking to the Lord, prior to presenting our needs to our Lord, we need to recognize Him. And this gnosis, this knowledge, is provided mostly by the different parts of the supplications. For example, as we said, the expressions of love that the infallible Imams provide for us in the supplications, while there is no exaggeration involved, this means that they have considered themselves nothing. Why do they engage in supplication like that? While we know that they are infallible, they are in the highest stage of belief and faith possible. They are the best divine man. They are the most pious ones. They are the purest ones. And the answer to this question was provided in the previous episodes.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo keshti onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad abaz bala bas. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good, about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too, it's
not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The Ocean of Dua.
So, in the fourth objective of supplication, we said that the expression of love is so deep by the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam that we seem to be short of understanding them. We do not find out why do they talk to their lords like that. We do not find that out why they claim to be in love of the Almighty Allah. And they claim that they can somehow tolerate the punishment of the Almighty Allah, but at the same time, they want to be with the Almighty Allah. That is why Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Habni sabartu ala adhabik, fa kayfa asbiru ala firaqik?" Suppose I could tolerate your punishment, then how could I be tolerating being away from you? This is not a claim. This is the truth. Because they do not have their recommended actions and prayers and worshipings for the sake of being away from nar, being away from punishment, or for the sake of the awards the Almighty Allah has vouched for. But the point is, they provide their actions and deeds for the sake of the Almighty Allah and no one else. That is why they can say, لَإِنْ أَدْخَلْتَنِ النَّارِ لَأُخْبِرَنَّ أَهْلَ النَّارِ حُبِّي لَكَ. If you put me in hell, I will announce to the people of hell my love to you. In Sha'baniyya prayer, Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, وَإِنْ أَخَذْتَنِي بِذُنُوبِي أَخَذْتُكَ بِمَغْفِرَتِكَ. If you punish me for my sins, I will ask you your pardon. وَإِنْ أَدْخَلْتَنِ النَّارِ أَعْلَمْتُ أَهْلَهَا أَنِّي أُحِبُّكَ. And if you put me in hell, I will inform its residents that I love you. So, as we see, all we have heard of the love of the lovers towards their beloved ones, their sayings and their exaggerated fictions, is not at all comparable, even for a second, to the tongues of sincerity and assured hearts of the infallible imams that we are discussing. Those are the ones who have handed down these transmitted supplications to us to be reading, reciting, and thinking over. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The ethnic cleansing of Palestine is inseparable from the racialized structures of Zionism, which receives unbridled support from Europe and the United States. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Israeli regime leaders have declared their intent to conduct collective punishment and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians, with Israeli War Minister Yoav Gallant calling them human animals and vowing to eliminate everything. In his address, the ICC prosecutor made no mention of the textbook case of genocide, referenced by Greg Mokiber, a top human rights official, who recently resigned in protest over his organization's failure to take action. Instead, Khan reiterated the decontextualized Western misrepresentations of the Zionist regime's war with Hamas, in which Palestinians want no part, suggesting that thousands of Palestinian victims have been caught in hostilities as unfortunate collateral damage. In fact, the Zionist regime has been waging war on the Palestinian people for decades in an ongoing campaign to displace them from their land. With or without Hamas or Fatah, Islamic Jihad, and other resistance movements, the Palestinian people have been resisting the colonization of the land by Euro-Zionist settlers since the late 19th century. One of the earliest documented instances of Palestinian resistance occurred in 1886, when the Palestinian farmers of Meblis and Al-Yehudia refused to let their land be seized by Zionist settlers of Petah Tikva. Yusuf Al-Khaledi, a prominent Palestinian politician and former mayor of Al-Quds, perfectly foresaw the impending anti-colonial struggle. In 1899, Khaledi delivered a sharp warning to Theodor Herzl, the political father of Zionism, that the Palestinian people would never acquiesce to the Zionist aspiration to seize control and become masters of Palestine, but rather would steadfastly resist. Neither the ICC prosecutor nor most Western governments have shown any concern for the colonial history shaping present global conditions. The Zionist regime and its allies have made significant efforts to silence and suppress this history, going as far as to demand the resignation of UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres for highlighting that the Hamas attack did not happen in a vacuum. The reductive representation of the conflict as one between only the Zionist regime and Hamas aligns the parameters of justice with the official European and American political stance, thus enabling the unfolding ethnic cleansing and genocide. Such reductivism and dehistorization sidesteps the fundamental questions around the Zionist regime's settler colonial structures and the Zionist ideology that informs its violent practices towards Palestinians. These actions have been facilitated by active involvement or silence of international institutions since the publication of the Balfour Declaration more than a century ago. If anything, the events of October 7th have only underscored the fundamental roots of the conflict, namely Euro-Zionist settler colonialism, racism, and moves to eliminate the indigenous people of Palestine. As far back as 1895, Herzl prophesied that Jewish settlers must spirit Palestinians across the border, noting that this ethnic cleansing must be performed discreetly and circumspectly. Today, the Zionist regime, the US and other European regimes have been explicitly deliberating over the potential displacement of Palestinians in Gaza to the Egyptian Sinai, while communities in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds have been enduring ongoing ethnic cleansing for decades, an issue that Jewish settlers are seeking to accelerate while the world's attention remains fixed on Gaza. The ethnic cleansing of Palestine is inseparable from racialized structures of Zionism, which receives unbridled support from Europe and the US. Ethnic cleansing and genocide are not spontaneous events. They are preceded by deliberate racial branding alongside special and military planning. The racialized branding that laid the groundwork for the dispossession of Palestinians in 1948, forcing hundreds of thousands into exile while destroying their towns and villages, endures to this day. The Zionist narrative regards all Palestinians as a demographic threat to the Zionist regime. This branding has been intricately linked with meticulous special planning, aiming to concentrate the Palestinian population into encircled and non-contiguous enclaves in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, and bounded neighborhoods within the occupied territories. Although Palestinians constitute the majority population from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, they are denied their basic right to self-determination, and they are confined to around 15% of the land under various forms of Israeli regime rule, ranging from military occupation in the West Bank to siege and bombardment in Gaza. While calls to expedite the pace of ethnic cleansing have grown louder since October 7th, they were already circulating within the Israeli regime political and military establishment, with calls for a second Nakba and to wipe out Palestinian villages. The current onslaught against Gaza is part of this incremental genocide, a continuing catastrophe to which Palestinians have responded across the land with resolute resistance and steadfastness. ¶¶ It is essential to acknowledge the embedded colonial power dynamic within international law and institutions, which has actively shaped the global legal and geographical order according to Eurocentric racial distinctions and colonial interests, dispossessing indigenous peoples of their land and right to self-defense. Such distinctions are currently being used to rationalize war and ethnic cleansing in Gaza. These concepts persist in various forms and expressions. In the contemporary Western official perspective, the non-Western world exists in the jungle, as articulated by EU's foreign policy chief last year. Such descriptors are used not only in derogatory fashion, but also to achieve tangible objectives, to justify settler violence as self-defense, and to dispossess non-Europeans deemed as primitive jungle dwellers of their land and resources. Today, these very concepts are applied to Palestinians for the same reasons: to strip them of their land, legitimize genocide and ethnic cleansing against them, and deny them the right and means to defend themselves against Israeli settler colonialism. This morbid genocidal atmosphere has been intensifying with the direct involvement of Western regimes, which have ensured the necessary diplomatic conditions and provided weaponry, capital, intelligence, and media support for the Zionist regime. The U.S. and most European governments have continued to encourage Israel, even as its forces disregard the Geneva Conventions because they know that such rules are generally made by and for the white man. As legal scholar Anthony Angi has noted, the basic structures of colonialism underpin all major schools of international jurisprudence. The entrenched Euro-colonial structure permitting the international order has enabled and licensed the dispossession and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians since 1948. This is not a war between Israel and Hamas. Rather, it is a continuation of settler colonial violence aimed at uprooting the indigenous people of Palestine from their land.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
With my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. You, good earth, glorious land, son to you, see, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms. I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you, you of my roots, Palestine, 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 Palestine. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my child, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on. Lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since some of thee inside my aching heart, some of thee inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says this